Welcome to Alumni Live, the podcast. These are conversations with Grand Valley State University film and video graduates about the industry, the film video major, and alumni profiles.
Hello and welcome, everybody, to an episode of GVSU's Alumni Live podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in to this very special episode. My name is Griffin Sheridan, and I'm joined by Rory and Amanda Webb. Rory and Amanda, how are you guys?
Good, good.
Doing great.
How are you?
Good. We are going to be talking about a different kind of sequential storytelling on tonight's episode. We're very excited to talk to you all about our own careers in graphic novels and comics, a different side of sequential art. Amanda, Rory, give us a little bit of background as to your time at GVSU, when you graduated and such.
Yeah, so I'm Rory Webb. I graduated with a film and video production major in 2005. It was a really great experience. My emphasis was in video, which was really cool because I could take a few classes and dabble into some of the other pieces like 16 millimeter as well as animation.
I am Amanda Webb. I'm actually Rory's wife. I graduated from Grand Valley in 2006. I got a degree in art and design. I was very heavily into comics, still am.
Again, I'm Griffin, graduated class of 2019 from GVSU. I didn't graduate a film and video major either. I have a communications degree from GVSU. I was about halfway through the film and video degree when COVID-19 hit. I decided that it was maybe better to just go ahead and take the degree that I had finished and see what happens to the world. That eventually what even allowed me to kind of have the time to get into writing comics. I guess that's something we could touch on too, is the specific sides of the graphic novel industry that we all work in. I'm a writer. Rory?
I would say writer, creator. I am not blessed with the artistic talent that Amanda is, but I have a thirst for telling all sorts of stories in pretty much whatever medium you can think of.
And he's a great reference model. And I'm like, I can't figure this out. I need your hand. He's done that lots of times.
That's what you find, I feel like, with so many married creators. For every comic book artist partner, there is the reference model spouse. That's beautiful, really.
He had to do, there was a scene that I had to draw in the comic where it was like a guy like flipping.
And Rory, famously, you can do a very good backflip.
He filmed it on the trampoline and I just took it frame by frame. I was trying to emulate Steve Skros.
Oh,
he's one of my favorite comic artists. He does a lot of that like really cinematic stuff. Yeah, so I do the drawing, obviously, the illustration, but the book that we make together is more of like a co-written thing.
It's a thorough mind meld, I imagine, when you guys are in the same house. That's really awesome. And I imagine makes for some really great creative sessions. That's always so interesting to me, where like I co-write mostly with my best friend. But he lives on the other side of the country, so everything is always remote, and we can always leave something behind. We can walk out of the stream yard and have our fumes with each other, or whatever it might be. Do you find that you guys are pretty creatively like in step, like in sync with each other, or is there a push and pull?
I would say so, because we both have similar interests, obviously. It's more interesting because, like, I'll see something that he doesn't, and then he'll come back and pick up on something that I totally missed, and it's kind of like a really collaborative effort.
Oh, I was just going to say, there's a lot of times I'll turn around in my chair, and I'll be like, so I was thinking, and I could just see it. She's like, oh my goodness, here we go. Here's another change.
As soon as the chair swivels around,
she
can feel it.
But I think, you know, it's not so much that we clash or anything. I think it's just making sure we're moving in the same direction. And it's not even so much
that,
but I would say at the same speed, because there's ebbs and flows to this creative process. And sometimes maybe I'm not moving as fast and she's moving faster, or vice versa. And that, I think, is where it can sometimes get interesting.
Sure. Well, there you go, folks. That's what it's like to never be able to escape the side of your creative partner.
It should be copacetic.
I mean, that's maybe even part of what we're going to be getting into when we talk about the process of making these things. The collaborative nature of it, as is with filmmaking or any other sort of video production, and really any multi strong person creative endeavor, whether that's music, movies, comics, a team sport, really. There has to be collaboration and understanding, and everyone should be on the same wavelength, but doing it all in a hopefully special and unique way to make something cool. Let's talk about what is the relevance of this to the film video major folks. What can you do, not just with the degree itself, but with the skill sets that you pick up in these classes? And I think actually this thing I'm talking about, this collaboration, is the perfect thing to bring up when we talk about what's the crossover between making comics and film video work. It's creative collaboration. You have a bunch of different minds in the room that all have a different idea of what this final product could look like and all have different skills that they're bringing to the project. And so finding all of the right ways and right conversations to have to get to an end result that everybody feels really happy and proud of, I think, is the same whether it's comics or film and video. Amanda, Rory, how do you guys feel?
I didn't do any film classes. And in art, it's not like a team sport. You're doing it by yourself. I mean, you can show your stuff to other students or whatever. And then there's obviously the critiques, which can be interesting.
The critiques is a great overlap, I think, with the film and video stuff.
Nobody, I mean, at least I didn't like critiques because nobody likes to hear anything negative about their work, but it is a very useful tool having a room full of other creative people who are in the visual arts. And you all have to put your same projects on the wall and the professor talks about it. And then everybody else gets a chance to kind of give their two cents about it.
Yeah.
And obviously it's been like 20 years or whatever since I had a critique, but I do remember it was very nerve-wracking, but you would get a lot of good feedback. And then you could take that and, you know, rework the project or whatever you're working on to make it better.
Absolutely. And that's not too dissimilar to working, you know, whether you are an artist on a book, getting feedback from a writer or an editor. I'm hoping that it goes both ways with all the artists that I work with and that I'm going to be giving input on the pages that they're turning in. I hope the artist feels comfortable enough to come to me and say, I don't know if any of this that you're doing with the story makes sense. And of course, then there's editors too, depending on how big the operation might be. But you might also have an editor that's looking over both shoulders saying, I don't know if I agree with this, this or that. And you sort of have to put all of your notions about it aside. And if you're making something that's for a big company like a Marvel or a DC, something like that, you'll have to sort of put it aside and say, well, this is bigger than me. In that sense, you know, it's like work for hire, right? It's like going on and making a commercial for a client or something like that. What is going to get us the best result to please the folks who hired us?
I do a lot of illustration commissions right now. Mm-hmm. And so I guess it's similar to that because like they'll tell me what they want and I'll sketch it and send it, you know, tell me what you want changed or whatever. And they'll come back with these, I think this is going to look wrong, but if this is what you want, like you're the one paying me. So it's similar to that. You just kind of have to put your own ego in check and let the people with the purse strings or whoever's in charge.
Rory, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I got a few things. I think about what sort of interests me when going into film and video. It sort of goes into middle school and high school a little bit. I really started to get into playing around with my parents' video camera and making movies and stuff. And I was like, hey, this is pretty cool. It's a cool way to jump in there and tell a story. That went into at Grand Valley, the film and video program. And it was really interesting seeing that new tools I had available from the program. I was like, oh, cool. Look at this awesome camera. This thing blows this camera away. And so that was really cool to have all these different tools that I could make a better product. The other thing was working with people. You think I'm just shooting this movie behind this rickety little old video camera, and then you have all these different tools and you suddenly realize I need a team of people to put this all together to make this the best version it can be. And you really start thinking about working with other people. And then in the creative aspect, that's a whole nother animal. You got a lot of people who are just as passionate about these projects as you are, and you work with each other and you try to figure how you're telling the story. And that was a really cool experience. After graduating, I had worked at the public access television station for about 6 years. And We would sometimes do short videos, whether it was a PSA or a promotional video. It was a nonprofit in Holland, MacTV. It was really cool to work with these other organizations, these other nonprofits, and they're trying to explain what they want. And you're trying to build this project for them and bring their vision to life, which was pretty cool. And it was cool to go out after I graduated in the real world to really work with people who are doing really great work and to showcase what they're doing and what their vision is for this project.
Absolutely. Both mediums have this collaborative nature to them and sometimes have this hierarchy of folks involved as well. We're going to talk a little bit about the business side of it all too later. Everything that I learned in my film and video classes, I feel were very helpful in making comics. Obviously not the exact technical specs of a camera or what settings to use in Adobe Premiere Pro. Those were not necessarily perfect for making comics, but they were the right tools I needed to do all of the gigs that led me to making comics, I will say too. Your film theory classes, I think a lot of the things that I learned in those classes also play a big role in how we make the comics, which we can sort of move into in a moment here. Real quick, why are you making comics? I think they're really cool. It comes from a lifelong love of the medium. It's hard to know who came first, film or comics. Both of them are really early loves for me, and both were kind of a pipe dream. And it became clear that one of them was possible on a professional level. I want folks to understand that you can make comics and you can make films at any level with whatever you have at your disposal, and you don't need any sort of distribution or anything to make you a comic book writer or a comic book artist or a filmmaker. You don't need any sort of validation besides your own, really. But of course, there is some sort of switch that flips in your brain after you get paid to do it. I think that's just the nature of where we live and the lifestyle that we all have to survive out here. But I love comics, and it became clear that there was maybe like a North Star on the horizon for me. I spent a lot of time doing film and video stuff, like doing multimedia projects, podcasts and YouTube videos and running people's social media. That's how I even fell into the right areas and stumbled through the right doors that led me to making comics professionally. So it's all this tangled web, really, for me. Amanda, why comics?
I started reading them when I was 9. So it's been a very large chunk of my life. The X-Men issue number one with Jim Lee, which is iconic, of course. Everybody loves that one. So I've been an X-Men girly for my whole life. I don't really read it anymore lately, but it holds a special place in my heart. I think that and cartoons have a big influence. I don't know if you do like storyboards when you write, or is that more the artist?
I think it's different for a lot of folks. The way that I will write a script is basically like, how can I storyboard, but with words solely? At least that's kind of what it feels like for me. So again, the skills that we're picking up in the film classes, the storyboarding and whatnot, was very important in my creative process. So it is very similar.
Yeah, because even when we were working on our comic, we wrote the script all the way through, and then I went and did thumbnails, like really, really loose panel positions and stuff. But even knowing where the camera, quote unquote, is in each panel, Rory helped with that a lot. He's like, okay, there's these rules in film, like you can't cross the line or whatever. And he was explaining that to me. And so I think there's a lot of overlap, like storyboarding to comics pipeline. His film knowledge helped me figure out what rules not to break, you know, or if I was going to break them on purpose.
Absolutely. There are no rules. There are guidelines. There are fence posts that we like to pay attention to make sure that there's clarity. Or sometimes you want to throw the clarity out the window, too, and just say, nope, we're going totally off the beaten path.
Going rogue.
Bring it back to the X-Men. Going rogue.
Yeah.
Rory, did you, how about you, man?
Yeah, for me, it was a different path. Like, I haven't been a huge comic fan back in the day, but a lot of movies really struck me, you know, whether it was Labyrinth or Willow or even like Aliens, all those great movies. Yeah. Amanda mentioned it too. Cartoons, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Man, I love the 80s version. I'd even say a lot of video games, especially like the role-playing games. I remember playing through one of the early Final Fantasies and chugging along. I had no idea what was going on and just got pulled into the story. Final Fantasy IV, it was two at the time, but one of the characters like died. And I was like, what is going on here? This is crazy. That was some of my early inspirations. I think just telling a story and pulling some type of reaction from somebody's just one of the coolest feelings in the world. I'll just tell a real quick story. I was a senior in high school and we had this really tough English teacher and he had taught college classes. So he's a really tough grader. And one of the projects we got to do, like, hey, can I like do a movie on the book 1984? And he's like, oh, sure, I guess. So I was like, sweet, this is going to be awesome. And so I made this movie. There's just like a 15-minute movie based on the story. And we played it. And I just remember he was just staring at the TV with a smile on his face and like wondering what was going to happen next. And I was like, man, I made that guy have that look on his face of wonder. And I was like, how can I do this more? What else could I do this with other than movies? And of course, jump into other mediums from there.
Yeah, that's sort of the answer to the question on a more heady level beyond just why comics. It's more so the emotional response from somebody being able to pull some sort of ethereal something or other out of your mind, and then to put it into some sort of physical space, a comic, a movie, a video game, theater, music, to put it out into the world and then have it resonate with somebody is a thrill that is hard to describe. It is a rush of dopamine that nothing else can really rival. It's super, super special, I think. And I think that is really what drives a lot of folks that are in any sort of creative business.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about how we make these things. Creatively, we're going to talk technically, what does the team on a comic book look like? I think creatively, you start with, you know, a writer typically will have some sort of idea. Or maybe if it is, again, coming from a more corporate side, an editor has an idea, reaches out to a creative team, typically a writer first, to say, hey, we have this idea. How do you feel about it? Would you be interested in working on this? Or a writer will go to an artist and say, I have this idea. How would you feel about working on this? Is this something you like? Do you have the schedule for it? Comics is super weird because it's like instant gratification where if everything just lines up, you can have a finished product in a few months, really, you know, depending on like the scale of it. Let's say it's a traditional 20 to 22 page comic book issue. You could have that finished in 2 months from we need a script to, okay, here it is. I'm holding it in my hands. A lot of other mediums, film especially, can take a long time, but creatively, it starts, I think, in a really similar place. I have this idea, and now I need to assemble the team around me. Comics can be such a close-knit, tiny team of people, but so can independent filmmaking. It really just depends on the project. It doesn't have to be this huge production. You can have a few people on set in the same way that you can have a handful of people making a comic book. Usually you've got yourself a writer, an artist, or sometimes an art team, depending on if you've got one person or multiple doing the pencils, the inks, and then the colors. Amanda, you are an artist. Do you do everything?
I do it all.
Oh my goodness. That's incredible.
Yeah, I'm the penciler. I'm the inker. I'm the colorist. I'm the word bubble girl, the letterer.
The letterer is also very important. Sometimes a designer, someone will get in there and stitch the whole thing together in a nice, pretty package and will maybe come up with the logo or any sort of what we'll call the trade dress where the names are going on the cover, that sort of thing, even just down to like, where's the barcode? Where's the UPC? If it's going to be sold in stores, right?
The graphic design of it.
Yeah.
I am not good at graphic design.
It's not your passion.
Oh, no, definitely not.
Yeah, usually I get stuck with some of those jobs.
See, this is the great part, like a really interesting point, which is that I think a lot of folks would just kind of assume, oh yeah, the artist, someone obviously visually inclined and has a literal hand in everything that you see on the page, is not the person coming up with the logo, is not the person dictating what necessarily is happening on each page or what goes on each page, where each page goes in the file that has to be sent out to print. That's a different person. It's a designer. a lot of times you'll see letterers and designers as one package. Then an editor is a really interesting role in comics, where in film and video, we're thinking of somebody sitting at a computer and stitching the thing together in some sort of software. An editor here is not necessarily doing that, or at least typically it's not quite that invasive, but it is like a conversation in the way that an editor is informing the work that a writer director have put forth. We talk about how a movie is made three different times, right? There's the movie that's written, there's the movie that's shot, and then there's the movie that's cut together. And they can all be really different. But an editor in comics is sort of more like a producer, maybe, for film and video, saying, well, I'm listening to what your goals are with the piece, and I think, actually, you might want to do this instead of that, and making decisions that will get them closer to what they think the director is trying to do. I think that's about it for a team. Would you guys say so?
Yeah, I mean, we're a two-person team.
So many people wear so many different hats, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's for sure.
It would be nice to have my own little pocket graphic designer or editor, but if I can't do it myself, I'll have Rory do it. And if he can't do it, then we just kind of cobble together as best we can.
For sure. Comics can be as small as one person. It's not uncommon.
Hey, it's Randy. We're taking a short break to tell you about the Morse Cuppy Film, Video, and Animation Study Abroad Endowed Scholarship. The scholarship was established by Bill Cuppy with support from Deanna Morse to help film, video, and animation students with the cost of studying abroad. Alumnus Bill Cuppy talks about why he started the scholarship.
We created this scholarship because experiencing the world and other cultures has been life-changing for us, and we wanted students to have a similar experience during this pivotal time in their lives.
Caroline Hamilton, the 2024 recipient of that scholarship, describes the benefits of the support she received.
I'm a film and video major, and I have a German minor. I've been studying German for about 8 years now, and so I decided to study abroad this past summer in Germany. It definitely challenged me as a person. I had to figure out how to do things and communicate and just put me out of my comfort zone. It introduces you to new things that you'd be afraid to experience because you don't want to embarrass yourself, but you have to just go for it. The scholarship itself, just the almost permission to be like, yes, go experience this, go learn, go see what happens, how this changes how you see the world and how you approach your work. It took the pressure off of me a little bit to just be like, I can experience this and not have to worry about everything else going on. I can just go enjoy my time there and see what I can learn and grow from.
For more information and to donate to the scholarship, visit the link in the description. Now back to the show.
But yeah, then the creative side of it, again, is sort of similar. There's a script that gets delivered to the artist. Again, most comics are 20 to 22 pages, typically. If you're working in the zine space, that's a whole different ordeal. Zines come in all shapes and sizes and page counts, and that's why we love them. But typically, from my experience handing over a script, film can be quite rigid. It needs to be formatted this exact way. You need to have this information in this exact spot. This is the font to use. This is the place to put the title. This is the place to put your contact information. In film, all of that is like really, really specific. Whereas comics, there's just not really a sort of decided format to use. Everybody just writes in whatever way is most comfortable to them and whatever way they think is going to most efficiently and clearly communicate the ideas to the artist. That said, a lot of folks write in screenplay format for comics, myself included. It's very, very similar, where all the dialogue is centered, and instead of necessarily describing all the action that's happening in between dialogue, it's just panel one. This is what's happening in here. This is the action that's happening in this panel. Here's some dialogue that goes along with it. Panel two, so on, so forth. Rory, what's that process look like on your end?
You know, I never really thought about writing a graphic novel script in the form of traditional script writing, but it's comfortable to me, and that would be a great way to go. As far as writing, I'm very much sort of big picture as far as the story goes and trying to be very organized with it. On several projects, Amanda jumps in and moves very quickly, and I'm more methodical to begin with. And I'm like, okay, let's get our spreadsheet out. Let's figure out what's happening.
I love a spreadsheet. I have not come across a spreadsheet in my own work.
Spreadsheet hates to see me coming. I can mess it up every time.
For every spreadsheet curator, there is a spreadsheet messer-upper.
Oh, yes.
Definitely.
I know with The Ascendants, the graphic novel we worked on, we actually started with index cards and did that in film and video. You know, here's all the scenes that I want.
Uh-huh.
We decided that, okay, these are all the scenes, and then laid them all out. And we're like, what's the best way to tell this in what order? We would add things. We would jump between a primary story and a secondary story. That helped really seeing that whole thing and really trying to work on the flow of the story.
There are so many ways to do it. I think it's really interesting, you know, you guys have the note cards, and I suppose you could definitely do that remotely, but you guys being in such close proximity to each other, you get to just exchange the note cards and look over the note cards and everything. And that's something that I feel like is a good both point of comparison and contrast between filmmaking. Filmmaking, a lot of times, everyone is there on set. Everyone is in the same room when making the thing itself, whereas comics is often remote. I mentioned it earlier, my co-writer, Ethan S. Parker, lives on the other side of the country, and that's always been the case. And we've written so many books like that, where we just get on the phone or we're sending emails or texts back and forth. We have only met one artist that's worked on our books in person, because that's just how it works. It all happens over email and Dropbox. I think sometimes it can be a really lonely experience. There is a lot of solitude. That's part of the reason why I love having a co-writer. It feels a little less lonely, the two of us going back and forth and having someone to bounce ideas off of. But certainly I know a lot of artists that are like, I have to hop on a video call with other artists and we all chat while we draw, because it makes it a little bit like easier to hang out and draw comics instead of it being a very lonely time.
Sitting alone in the dark drawing.
Yeah. And of course, filmmaking, a lot of the times everyone's on set. What I'm trying to say is everyone on the comic book side of things is more like the film editor, where it's just like, I'm at my computer for 14 hours a day, man. But there are ways around it. And of course, it's so great that you guys get to be in the same room, because when you are in the same room, I can speak to the couple of times Ethan and I have been able to do this, the energy can be quite different than over email, of course.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes I'm at home and he'll be at work and I'll get an idea and I'll send him a Discord. But since you work with people that are so far away, like having the technology today, like texting and DMs and all that, makes it so much easier to get in touch with each other.
Yeah, it does also. It opens the door up to being able to work with so many people that you might not be able to work with in the context of like a local production, right? If you have to gather a crew together, you're pretty limited on who you can actually work with unless you have the budget to fly people out. But that's kind of the cool thing about comics, is that as long as you have someone's email address and you're willing to work around time zones, which can be frustrating, then you are good to go. We have a gentleman named Pablo Tanisha drawing a book for us right now. And I think he lives in Italy or Spain, maybe.
So you're getting emails from him like at weird hours of the night, and he's, you know, vice versa.
Of course. And English is not his first language. So that's the other part of it, too. There's the delay in communication where we're all able to take the time to translate even if needed, which is kind of crazy. And so that is a really cool part that I think is special to comics, is that we can just have this really wide net that we can cast. But the writing, you write the script, or sometimes, like you're saying, Rory, it comes in different shapes and sizes. Sometimes there's also something that some folks may have heard of. It's called the Marvel Method. It is just a paragraph or so description, maybe a couple pages describing the story of the entire issue. And then the artist will go and interpret that as they please and sort of draw that out in whatever way they see fit. There's a lot less direction involved. And then the writer will come back in and fill in dialogue and make adjustments based on what the artist has drawn. So there's so many different ways to do it. But then, of course, the artist is in there doing their thing, Amanda, and you may have thoughts about the script, thoughts about the story, and you're making judgment calls on that sort of thing, or maybe bringing things up to the writer. And that's where the collaboration really kicks off, is once the artist is on board and doing their thing, and then there is the back and forth on what is this thing actually going to look like. So again, just like in film, there's the comic that is written, there's the comic that is drawn. Comics being very serialized, sometimes the writer is thinking just way, way, way ahead than an artist might be. Amanda, how do you feel when you first get a script? What is the first step for you?
The first thing I do is the thumbnails, which is just like a real tiny little drawing with where the boxes would be and like blobs, like, okay, this is this character and then this is this one. Then once I have that, I go into just straight up sketching the characters and filling in the background or whatever, looking for reference photos if I need, which I need a lot for like backgrounds because we all hate a background. Then I ink it. I draw digitally, which I don't know how the old timey comic artists did that all by hand, like all the perspective and stuff. And then I color it digitally. And then after that, I do the word bubbles in Illustrator. Once a chapter was done, like all the pages, Rory would look it over. And he was kind of like the editor where he would point out any continuity errors in the art. So it's nice because when you're drawing, you're like really in it and sometimes can't pull back to like see the whole thing. And it's nice to have another set of eyeballs that is like, why has bro got a scar on the wrong side of his face?
This guy's left-handed now.
Yeah, I guess all my characters are left-handed because they all had weapons in their left hand. Like, oh, geez.
He's a script supervisor over here. Excellent.
Yes.
Yeah, I know sometimes the conversation is dominated by the fact that it takes artists significantly longer to draw a page than it takes a writer to write a page for comics, where it's like, I might do what we call a splash page. That's when there aren't panels necessarily on the page. It's one big image. I might write out a description for a splash page that's like, and then the universe is born. Consciousness itself becomes present in the world. And it took me 2 seconds to write that sentence. But of course, now the artist has to interpret it and really figure out how it works and can spend a day, several days even drawing that. It is still a two-person situation where even though there is that discrepancy in the amount of time, you still want to have both hands on the wheel a little bit and deciding everything together, collaborating on it. It's still very important.
Well, and I think that's, at least as like a writer and creator, that's where I felt like, man, what can I do to help this process? Because I feel like I need to be doing something because I know it takes a long time. So I would pick up other skills. I learned a bunch about making a website. I would go in and do some of the graphic work so I can contribute in other ways that will help us get to that end goal without just sort of waiting for this next chapter to be done.
Absolutely. I actually think this is a decent point to transition into the business side. Once the art is done, you hand it off down the line, and then there's a moment where everyone goes, yep, I think this looks good. And it gets sent off to the printer or to the website, if it's a digital comic, of course. And then comes the business side of it, which is we have to market this, we have to promote it. Which I think is very similar to doing that for an independent film. You finish it and then you have this thing that you spent so much time and energy on and you care so much about. And it was such a great creative endeavor, but I spent months and months doing it and now I have no money because I put all the money into it. Now I need this thing to make money.
Yes.
It is the intersection of art and commerce, right? We all have to arrive there at some point on most projects and it's always a crossroads. The business side of it is tough, and it's all about what space you're operating in. You can be over at a big place like your Marvel and DC, in which case other people are probably going to market that book for you or tell you how to market the book, when to show up for an interview to talk about the book, so on. But if it's an independent comic, it's just all on you, man. And that is a full-time gig. I mean, finding out how to market something today where like it felt like for a while, maybe you could get on social media and convince some people to pay attention to it and maybe it could start something. That is the case still today to some regard, but social media is in such a weird transition sort of space, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a lot harder to tell what moves the needle on this sort of thing anymore. What do you guys feel when you say, okay, it's time to get people to look at this? What's the first thing you do?
Oh, geez. When we finished the first book, which was 4 chapters. So it's like a graphic novel, basically. We did our first Comic-Con, which was up in Traverse, C4.
Great show.
We haven't been there in a while, but it was small enough where, you know, we felt comfortable, but not like huge, like GR Comic-Con.
We had no idea what we were doing, though, either. We were just like, let's do this.
Yeah, we had no idea. We're going to, you know, throw a couple $100 at this Artist Alley table and bring our books. it was eye-opening because it's so hard to get somebody on board with something that is not already established.
Oh, yeah.
Indie comics, indie books, indie whatever. They're like, oh, it doesn't have Spider-Man? I'm not interested. People go to Comic-Cons and they're looking for pop culture stuff. Mm-hmm. So already we were kind of behind where we needed to be. We learned quickly. In order to make some money back, we have to have fan art that we sell.
Yeah.
So I had fan art and all that. But it's just hard marketing yourself, talking about your work. I don't know how to describe it. You're like hyping it up to this stranger, you know, like, oh, my book is so awesome. You should read it. That's hard because we're just socialized into like, oh, you shouldn't brag about yourself. It is very hard because there's so many other great artists making their own comics or their own content. Like, what makes us stand out? Like, how do we get people to even pick up the book and flip through it, you know?
Absolutely.
Our first time, though, there was a lot of challenges. I don't even know how many. We've been to a bunch, mostly just in Michigan. Every time we talk about it, like, okay, what can we do better next time? What can we change? How can we better display this? We had a little tablet that would show a little minute movie that I made that you'd be able to sort of see some of the art in there. It's just a lot of those little things that would bring people over, but I think one of the most important pieces that we've both experienced at these Comic Cons and other places, it's about some of the people that you get to really meet and talk to. There's so many cool people that we've talked to. We'll be there and then we'll go the next year and somebody's like, hey, I stopped by your booth last year and I want to pick up your second and third volumes. That's awesome.
I love that.
You know, it's really exciting to see that. I think it's about not getting discouraged. Because it's like, you're not going to hit the ground running and just be this huge success. It's just trying to encourage yourself and then also talk with other artists, make those connections. That's so huge because a lot of times we can encourage them, they can encourage us. And that's super important in a field like this.
Absolutely. It's all about that sort of connection, whether that is, hey, could you give this a read? If you do, can you say something nice about it? You know, that sort of thing. Or if it is like, hey, I know that you have a podcast. Wouldn't it be cool if I came on there and talked about this book and then maybe I can promote the podcast in the book? It is a lot of when you're at this independent level, a lot of you help me out, I'll help you out. And maybe together we can get folks to check out the cool things that we're making. But I think what you're saying too is you just have to not get it discouraged. You have to keep going. You have to just do it. How do you make this part of your day-to-day life? How do you make this a regular part of your life? How can you face this sort of career? And I think it's kind of the same with film. I think film can take up a lot more time just because you got to transport a crew around. You got to lug equipment around. You got to shoot the thing. It takes a long time.
You got to know a lot of people.
Yeah.
Like just even getting actors and actresses. Like,
absolutely.
Because Rory's done some of his own films just for fun. Mm. And just finding people to actually be in the movies is hard enough.
So tough. Not getting discouraged is really a huge part of it because it can be really difficult to take this thing that is a passion for you and developing it. If you decide that's the move you want to make, because I do think it is a question that you should ask yourself is, do I want to take this passion of mine and turn it into my livelihood? Do I want to turn it into this thing that I do so regularly that I will call it my job? Well, you should ask yourself that because sometimes that might not be the best option. I do want to make sure that folks understand that too, that just because there's this burning passion for it, you don't have to push it into a space that you don't want it to be in. But I think if you're passionate about it, you should find a space for it in your life, no matter what, whether you're trying to make it your career or not. But just doing it, being very intentional about setting the time aside for it. You don't have to quit your job to chase your dreams. Turns out these creative endeavors, they don't pay so well sometimes. We don't want that to be the case, but sometimes it is. But I would say just being really intentional about it and making sure that you are setting the time aside is really the only way that you'll ever get it done. And stop waiting for that perfection.
Just do it. Another thing I'd like to add, like you just starting it is hard enough, but then you'll go and you'll be like, oh, I can draw better. I should go back and redo the old stuff. No, just leave it. Keep moving forward. You could spend your whole life going back and redoing the same thing over and over again and making small things better. I look at my first couple books and I'm like, I could draw so much better than that now. But back then, that was my talent level. And obviously, I've grown as an artist since then. But the big thing was I just had to keep moving. I had to just keep going. Don't stop. Don't go backwards. Mm-hmm. I think that's a very important point to make.
Not getting stuck on some of the details, even some of the more recent film projects that I've worked on. You know, you'd be going through and maybe editing a scene, like, oh man, I wish this scene could have been different. Maybe I should go reshoot this. No, just get the thing done, because you could just go shoot a whole new movie, a whole different movie. The other thing too that I learned over the last decade is, you know, I went to school for film and video. Do I enjoy making movies? Absolutely. Do I want to continue to do that? Yes. But don't be afraid to pivot, because maybe you'll find I like writing stories as the basis of a graphic novel. There's a whole lot of other ways that you can tell stories without it being a live action movie. Think about those other opportunities and avenues and experiment a little bit.
Absolutely. I always think about like some very famous writers, directors, and filmmakers like George Lucas, and him being like, I hate directing movies. That's hilarious coming from the guy who gave us one of the most prominent and influential movies of all time. It takes so much out of you. So maybe there is a better avenue for you, one that you hate less, even if it is a passion. But really all it is stringing together images to get a reaction out of people. That's all we're doing when we're writing comics, when we're drawing comics. It is all about what is image 1, 2, 3, A, B, C, and what is the effect that happens when I put them all right next to each other. And so maybe there is a different space. So yeah, definitely don't be afraid to pivot. Before we close it out, what are some things that folks can go and find that will maybe make all this conversation a little bit more concrete, to put it all in a bit more context? Myself, I've been making comics for a couple of years now. At the moment, there's pretty much just one big one that you can go and find, and it's a book called Kill Your Darlings that Ethan S. Parker and I wrote, Bob Quinn drew, and John J. Hill lettered and designed through Image Comics. It's a horror fantasy Ethan and I worked on while doing multimedia stuff with other comic book creators. We made podcasts and videos for other folks like Ryan Stegman, Donnie Cates, and Brian Michael Bendis. Through all that, we said, don't pay us, just help us make a comic book. So that is exactly how we got to make our first book, and we're really, really proud of it. You can find that in any comic book shops that carry Image Comics. The trade paperback collection is out, so it puts the whole thing together. The single issues have been done for a little over a year now. You can check that out, and maybe that will make the whole thing make a little bit more sense. Amanda, Rory, where can people find your work?
So we self-publish. We also have our books through Caliber Comics, which is kind of like more of an indie smaller press based in Michigan. So you can find them on Caliber's website. And then we also have our own website, legendsofakura.com, which is the name of our fantasy world. I believe you can get them on Amazon too, through Caliber.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Here's the cool thing about independent comics, as with a lot of independent art, all those profits go directly to the creators on a lot of these sorts of things. Obviously, every publisher will have a different setup. So I don't know what your guys' setup exactly is like with Caliber. Over at Image, there's the cost to print the book. And then once we have covered that cost, all of that goes to creators, which is really, really cool. And something that we love about comics is that it is so direct. We get to really see all of the financial side of things. And it's a pretty quick turnaround in terms of what costs have to be covered before we can start seeing some proceeds come back to us, which I think is pretty cool. Last question here. What experiences have you had at Grand Valley State University that have shaped or impacted your work and life positively?
So I currently work at Grand Valley, and we have a lot of student technicians that work for us in IT. We, of course, occasionally have the film and video students there. And, you know, what's really cool, talking with them about their projects, sharing some of my experiences, some of my projects, and they'll tell me all about their projects. They're like, would you want to see it? I'm like, heck yeah, I want to see it. It's so cool to be able to see that come full circle. I'll tell them some things I liked about it, some honest feedback. It's really cool to be able to give them some of that support that I had when I was going through the process too.
Mine would probably be just a lot of the people that I met while I was a student there. I mean, I'm still friends with some of the people that I took art classes with. Sometimes we'll yap about art and what we're working on. And that's really cool, just sharing ideas and the projects that we're currently working on or have worked on in the past.
Absolutely. A lot of it is all about those connections that you make, those peers surrounding you for a few years and keeping in touch with them, because it is a shared experience and there's an understanding, there's a kinship there. I don't even know where to begin in terms of the experiences I had at GVSU, having that support system that came out of the film video program supporting me as I was like, actually, guys, I think I'm going to go make comic books, at least for a little bit, was really important. But again, so many of the skills that I picked up in not just like a screenwriting class, but your film theory classes and taking the time to think about how images affect people and how we can get these emotional reactions, what causes the emotional reactions. That's all stuff that I carry in my work. Whether you are a film and video major, whether you end up getting the film and video degree or not, at the end of the day, that doesn't matter. What matters is your experience while you are there, no matter your major, no matter the degree. If you can walk away from it with something that you feel shaped you, I think that's really crucial, really important. And I would say my time at GVSU was exactly that. Amanda, Rory, thank you for coming on. Thank you for chatting with me. Really quick, where can folks find you?
Social media, Instagram, I'm primarily on there. My handle's Legends of Akura. Our website, legendsofakura.com.
Yeah, and of course, always look for us at any Comic Cons or any events locally. And, you know, if you see Legends of Akura, we'll be happy to talk with you at the table.
Excellent, man. I typically go by Griff Sheridan online, G-R-I-F. So that's on Instagram and Blue Sky. There's actually a lot of comic book creators on Blue Sky. So if you are a budding comic book creator, there's a suggestion. We found our artist for Kill Your Darlings on Twitter. So you can never underestimate the power of the internet. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Alumni Live. And of course, we'll see you guys in the next one. Have a great night.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Alumni Live, the podcast. Subscribe to our podcast to hear more from our alumni across the industry. Check out Alumni Live on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube for more conversations and networking. Let us know what topics you want to hear our alumni talk about. The Grand Valley State University Film Video Alumni Network is here for you, and we're glad that you're here. Thank you for listening.